Picture a terrified 16-year-old hiding in a monastery while his mother weeps and begs him not to accept the crown being offered. This wasn't some medieval fantasy. This was Michael Romanov in 1613, the reluctant founder of a dynasty that would rule 1/6 of the Earth's surface for 3 centuries. The previous decade had seen Russia descend into chaos, pretenders murdered, foreign armies pillaging, the throne a death sentence. Yet from this chaos emerged a family whose story would encompass everything from divine pageantry to basement executions, from building palaces of ice to burning Moscow to the ground. The Romanovs didn't just rule Russia, they became Russia, embodying its contradictions, its grandeur, and ultimately its tragic inability to evolve. As Vladimir Putin's inner circle reportedly calls him the Tsar today, understanding how the Romanovs wielded and lost power reveals uncomfortable truths about Russia's present. Michael Romanov understood that Russian power flows from spectacle. Physically frail with an eye twitch, he compensated through elaborate ceremonies that transformed governance into religious ritual. His father, Filaret, returning from captivity as patriarch, merged church and state into one autocratic machine. The real foundation of Romanov power was a devil's bargain with the nobility. When Alexei Mikhailovich faced popular revolt in 1648, his new law code granted nobles permanent estates and complete control over their peasants, who became serfs, human property prohibited from leaving the land. This established Russia's defining pattern: servility to superiors, tyranny to inferiors. Unlike England's parliament challenging royal power, Russia's nobility reinforced autocracy in exchange for absolute control over the peasantry, a pyramid of oppression with the Tsar at the apex and millions of serfs at the base, persisting for 2 centuries. Peter the Great didn't just reform Russia, he terrorized it into transformation. Standing 6'7", this manic genius personally shaved boyars' beards upon returning from Europe, symbolically cutting away medieval Russia. His infamous, all-mad, all-jesting, all-drunken synod was governance through controlled chaos, testing loyalty while humiliating aristocrats clinging to old ways. Peter's genius lay in ruthless pragmatism. After Sweden crushed his army at Narva, he melted church bells into cannons and conscripted the nobility for decades of warfare. He founded St. Petersburg on conquered Swedish marshland, forcing thousands to die building his paradise in the swamps. When his son Alexei plotted against reforms, Peter had him tortured to death. Yet Peter understood what modern leaders forget: competence trumps pedigree. His partner, Catherine, started as a peasant girl, his advisor, Menshikov, as a stable boy. Peter's table of ranks made state service, not birth, determine status, injecting new energy into governance. When he died in 1725, Russia was transformed but exhausted, having sacrificed a generation to his vision of greatness. Peter's death triggered something unprecedented: nearly 70 years of female rule in the world's most masculine empire. His widow, Catherine I, became Russia's first ruling empress, backed by the Guards regiments, establishing a pattern where real power belonged to whoever controlled the military, regardless of legal succession. Anna's reign featured notorious cruelty, including the infamous ice wedding, where she forced her court fool to marry an ugly servant and consummate their union in an ice palace, a perfect metaphor for the cold-hearted theatricality of Russian power. The true giant was Catherine the Great, a German princess who seized the throne after orchestrating her husband's murder. Rising at 6 each morning, she worked tirelessly while maintaining serene confidence. Her partnership with Grigory Potemkin combined intellectual collaboration with passionate romance. Together, they annexed Crimea, founded the Black Sea Fleet, and expanded Russia's southern territories. Catherine corresponded with Voltaire, presenting herself as an enlightened monarch, yet became the empire's largest serf owner. She grasped that in Russia, reform meant strengthening autocracy, not limiting it. When she died in 1796, Russia was a recognized European power, but the fundamental contradiction remained. How do you modernize a system built on medieval oppression? Alexander embodied Russia's contradictions. Dazzlingly handsome, liberally educated, yet complicit in his father's assassination. His defining relationship was with Napoleon, whom he met on a raft after defeat. "Me spending my days with Bonaparte," he wrote, both fascinated and repelled. When Napoleon invaded in 1812 with 600,000 men, the Battle of Borodino produced 80,000 casualties, the bloodiest single day until World War I. General Kutuzov chose retreat. Napoleon is a torrent, but Moscow is the sponge that will soak him up. The city's burning became Alexander's awakening. "The burning of Moscow illuminated my soul." Alexander pursued Napoleon across Europe, entering Paris on his horse, Eclipse, ironically, Napoleon's gift. This triumph made Russia Europe's arbiter through his Holy Alliance, yet victory bred paranoia. The Tsar, who once dreamed of reforms, became reactionary, fearing revolution everywhere. His sudden death in 1825 sparked rumors he'd faked it to become a wandering holy man, a myth revealing how even emperors dreamed of escaping autocracy's prison. Alexander II faced an impossible task, reforming Russia without destroying the system that sustained it. The Crimean War exposed Russia's backwardness, soldiers with flintlock muskets facing modern rifles. On February 19, 1861, Alexander freed 22 million serfs, declaring, "The autocracy established serfdom, and it's up to the autocracy to abolish it." But emancipation satisfied no one. Peasants received freedom but little land, forced to make redemption payments for decades. Nobles lost their human property but retained economic dominance. Alexander established independent courts, local assemblies, and modernized the military, yet remained fundamentally an autocrat, rejecting any constitution. The reforms unleashed forces Alexander couldn't control. The terrorist organization People's Will sentenced him to death. On March 1, 1881, a bomb shattered his legs. He died in the Winter Palace, surrounded by both his wife and son, Alexander III, who immediately rejected his father's liberal path. The Tsar Liberator's legacy proved that in Russia, reform from above inevitably triggers reaction, a lesson Putin seems to have learned well. Alexander III, the 6'3" colossus, reversed reforms with reactionary fury, approving pogroms, implementing Russification, ruling from barracks like Gatchina Palace. Yet he appointed Sergei Witte, whose industrialization tripled production and built the Trans-Siberian Railway. Russia modernized economically while regressing politically, a combustible combination. Nicholas II inherited the throne in 1894, catastrophically unprepared. At 26, he viewed Russia as his personal estate. His marriage to Alexandra proved disastrous. Her German background alienated society, while their son's hemophilia led them to Rasputin. The Russo-Japanese War triggered the 1905 revolution. World War I brought catastrophe, with Nicholas commanding the army while Alexandra and Rasputin dominated politics. When revolution erupted in February 1917, Nicholas dismissed it as minor. On March 2nd, he abdicated, ending 3 centuries of Romanov rule. On July 17, 1918, Bolsheviks executed the family in a basement, ending where it began, in an Ipatiev building. The Romanovs mastered autocracy's brutal logic: concentrate power absolutely, crush opposition mercilessly, modernize selectively, never yield control. Yet they never solved the fundamental paradox: can Russia be governed without autocracy? As Putin revives imperial symbolism and centralizes power, reportedly viewing Nicholas II as a weakling, the question remains hauntingly relevant. The Romanov story mirrors Russia's eternal struggle between reform and authoritarian control, a legacy living on in Russia's choices today.